Welcome to part two of our conversation with Sophia Temporelli. Have you ever had any moments or suspicions that something was there, something maybe not a permanent fixture of the house, but maybe something followed you or something else was going on in that house that really kind of made you go, oh crap, it's starting again?
I haven't. I mean, like if a TV turns itself on at night, which I'm assuming is a power surge, mm-hmm. that'll freak me out and I'll be like, is it back? But I know realistically there's nothing in this house because I would feel it.
Yeah.
And yeah. My pug would have known too. So, you know, super helpful.
I get a lot of letters over the years, and the one of the most frequent is, and the Xbox turned on by itself. It's like, I'll tell you what, mine does too all the freaking time. It's not a ghost.
Oh my God, I hated when my Xbox did that.
It's a flaw in the damn Xbox. That's what it is. It's like something triggered it. I don't know, a garage door opener, something does that with those. But it's just like, it is what it is, but it's not a ghost. That's so interesting. So tell me about this, because I'm curious, and maybe we can talk about this here as something that I don't normally talk about. But you got into broadcasting or podcasting about this topic at the age of 12. That's pretty cool. I played radio stations starting at 3. And I actually have, this is the funny part, I started at 3. And I have tapes of me pretending I'm playing what I call Ghostbuster Radio. And it was a talk format, kind of like this, and I'm talking about ghosts. And then I went into commercial radio at 14 and did, you know, top 40 and all that, and was This Is Weather Next. Mm-hmm. And then left that about 10 years ago. And now this came up 10 years ago and I started podcasting about ghosts. So it's kind of like full circle for me where I'm back doing what I was pretending to do at 3. But you started at 12 doing some of this stuff. How did you get into that?
Yeah. So, like I said, living in a haunted house does traumatize you. It leaves scars. And yeah. I was so young. And a lot of people in the paranormal when I started out were much older than me. Much older than me. And so there was no one I could really relate to. I mean, not that I want that for other kids, but, you know, you want someone you can talk to, like, hey, did you see, you know, iCarly or something? And it's like, but there's hot houses on it. Just like able to talk and feel like comfortable on an age level. And I thought there has to be other kids out there like me who have had these experiences. So I asked my parents, hey, can I start a radio show? And again, my mom never told me I was wrong. My dad didn't know what to think because I never stuck with anything. Mm-hmm. I took like jujitsu for a day. I tried tennis. Like, yeah. I'm clumsy. Sports aren't really my thing.
Yeah.
I can injure myself just fine on my own. And so they were like, I don't know if you're going to stay with that. And I'm like, but I really want a radio show. And since my dad had written a book for Peter James at the time, Rob Sarek, the site founder of liveparanormal.com, had been asking him to do a radio show. My dad's like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to write questions. And so I was bugging them about a radio show. And finally, my dad's like, okay, I'll talk to Rob. And he said, Rob, look, I don't want a radio show, but my 12-year-old daughter does. And he said, yeah, okay, bring her on the network. And yeah, here I am almost 11 years later.
So how did you jump into that? How did you begin broadcasting? What was the show like at 12 years old? What was the topics? How did that start for mm-hmm. you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't meet anyone around my age through it, but the format overall hasn't changed. I just hope my hosting has gotten better. Mm-hmm. Hope so, from 12 to 23.
Usually improves over the years. Yes.
Yeah. You hope so. Because like I said, we met so many wonderful people through the events. My mom's best friend was Debbie Constantino. We just met so many great people that we knew a lot of the, you know, para celebrities or whatnot. Mm-hmm. And so my dad reached out to Alexandra Holzer, the daughter of Dr. Hans Holzer, and mm-hmm. asked her to come on. And she was my very first guest on my show. And then, you know, we would reach out to the Booth brothers or Debbie Constantino. Just people like that, Dr. Lloyd Auerbach, and they all came on my show, and they were just really nice. I would ask them questions about the field, and I think that's the nice thing about the show is I get to learn so much through them, but so does the audience. Sure. So it's an interview style show, but for anyone who has an interest in the field or maybe going through a home haunting, we have teams on that can help them, psychics if someone wants to reach out to a past loved one. So it's about, you know, informing people on different views in the paranormal, but also, you know, sharing experiences that people can relate to, or, you know, helping someone find someone to help them with whatever problem they have, contacting a past loved one, a haunted house, just wanting to become an investigator. So it's kind of for all aspects, you know.
Sure.
Parapsychology, cryptozoology, aliens, we cover it all, even though I'm the ghost host.
After doing it for 10 years, tell me, what are some of the things that you are most surprised by that you didn't expect at the beginning?
I mean, it's probably not a great answer, but the thing I'm most surprised by is the stories of, like, almost dangerous incidents while investigating, or dangerous incidents. Mm-hmm. We had Keith Age on, and he's saying that he's filming at, I think he said Waverly Hills, and he thought he was stepping on a cord because he could tell he was stepping on something kind of round. Mm-hmm. Under his feet, foot, and they had run cables and everything to film, and so he just figured he was stepping on that. And later on, when they were viewing footage, he noticed he was not stepping on a power cable; he was stepping on a bobcat's tail.
Oh God!
And he heard buzzing, and he thought it was the power lines, but it was actually like the cougar bobcat growling at him for stepping on his tail. And so he's just like amazed that he was not bitten.
Yeah.
I had an investigative couple on, and the girl was saying that she was on an investigation, sat down on a bench, and it, like, a rusted needle went into, like,
oh god,
the cheek of her butt.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oof. I'm like, oh god.
Yeah. And some of the dangers of doing that, not necessarily coming from the dead, but more so the addicts of the area.
Yeah, or like Colin Brown from the Paranormal Files. This actually wasn't on my show. I was on a show with him. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that he was in an abandoned building. And he had done like a full investigation, filmed the video, everything. He leaves, goes outside to the car. He sees a man standing in the window. And he's like telling his friend, like, do you see that too? And he's like, and the guy's like, oh, yeah, no, that guy lives there. And he's like, really? You didn't want to tell me, like, that there's someone that lives there? Because it was, I think he said, an abandoned, like, asylum or something. And the guy just never left. At least that was the story. And it's just like, it's the things that you, like, I know there's dangers. The physical dangers can be some of the worst in the paranormal. But actually hearing the stories is very just, like, cringe. I'm just like, oh, God, a rusted needle, a bobcat.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, no.
Bobcat. That's one I've not heard of before. A bobcat.
Yeah, it's like a cougar or a bobcat.
Oh my god. Yeah.
He's lucky he didn't get bitten. Like I said, I'm accident prone, so I'm sure I could injure myself. Like,
yeah,
fine. But just hearing like all these things, I'm like, oh god, I'm not going to sit down on a bench anywhere anymore. Sure.
In terms of, like, on the topic of ghosts and things that you've learned over the years, has there been anything that, you know, we all, you know, go into this with some form of assumptions. I mean, one of the things I, you know, kind of thought of years ago was like, oh, I'm going to have more answers. I have far more questions than I do today than I did when I started. I'm more informed. I have more ways of relating when someone tells me a story of going, I've heard something like this. It takes a lot now to be surprised by something, or to not be able to say, well, I had a caller or somebody said a very similar experience. But one of the things, for example, that surprised me very much, and I thought sounded absolutely insane at the beginning of doing this about 10 years ago, was the concept of getting rid of a spirit, simply reasoning with it, where people are just like, we just talk to it and you just ask it to go away. And a lot of times it does. I'm like, really? That's it? Like, there's no exciting story. Like, this is all that it is. And the thing is, in many cases, that's how it works. Mm-hmm. I was very surprised by that.
Yeah, no, I mean, that definitely makes sense. I think, you know, they're people that have passed on. So it's to be expected that if you just talk to them person to person, that they would want to not frighten you.
Sure.
But I think that the concept of clearing a house is, at least in my eyes, a little hard because, you know, I think with good, reasonable spirits that, yeah, they would be like, oh man, sorry, I didn't mean to scare you. I just wanted to talk to someone.
Sure.
But when you have like a Joe Goldberg, they're not going to care. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's, unless they want to leave, they're not going to. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's kind of hard because, like, you know, I'm not saying anything wrong with this, but, you know, people that go in there with sage, they saged our house. Maybe it works in some cases. I can't say, but for my experience, it didn't. And I think it's so hard because, you know, you want it gone. But when the ghost doesn't want to leave, it's like, what do you do? And
yeah,
I think that's the hard thing.
That's always surprised me. I mean, but what surprised me more is the idea of just like going to Whole mm-hmm. Foods and getting some sage and walking around your house, asking things to leave mm-hmm. and then being like, oh shit, not the sage from Whole Foods. It's like, yeah, I mean, I don't, if I was the ghost, I'd be like, ooh, sage. I don't know.
I don't even know if they can smell. Like, honestly, I don't know what the range is with that either.
It's like, does Thanksgiving scare them too? You know, I've always been like, kind of like, what is this?
I agree. And I think that it's like, if, like I said, I'm not psychic, I'm a sensitive. If a ghost wants me to know it's there, mm-hmm. I will know it's there. And I think it's the same way with, you know, reasoning with them. If they want to go, they are going to go. They're going to be like, fine, sorry, I'm just not going to talk, or like, fine, I'll go somewhere else. But it's just up to them. I mean, I don't think there's anything else you can do. It's what they feel like doing.
Sure. Let me ask you this. What has been one of the most fascinating cases for you that you'll find yourself just kind of like Googling or looking up at random times? For me, for example, it's been Amityville. Since I was a kid, mm-hmm. reading that book over summer vacation, and then over the years, I've had like Laura DiDio and some of our others that were involved in the case on my show. And it's been always just like, it's one of those things that just draws me in. For you, what is that? Is there anything specific that it's just kind of like a, almost like a ghostly guilty pleasure, if you will, that you just kind of keep digging at?
Yeah, I feel like for me, it's two things. One, just like anything in Hollywood that's haunted. I just think it's so fascinating that, you know, the ghosts of the celebrities, whether it's just residual energy or an actual haunting. I just think that the times of the silver screen, although it was dark for a lot of the actors due to some of the stuff they had to go through, just the treatment from the studios, it was to the general public such a glamorous time. And I think that if you look at Hollywood Bowl now, it doesn't look like it did back in the day. And I think that that time period and just the ghosts and everything, I find really fascinating. I would love to investigate the Roosevelt Hotel. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I think definitely the Queen Mary, even though I've investigated there so much, I think just with having stowaways and them bringing families back from war, mm-hmm. that there are so many deaths accounted for, but what isn't? You know, Jackie's the most famous ghost on the ship, and there's audible responses from her. People have heard her talk to her, such as Peter, who discovered her. But there's also no record of a child dying in the second class swimming pool. Although she's in the first class, she's there because she prefers it, but that's not allegedly where she died.
Yeah.
And so I think just digging around and finding the stories of the people who died on the ship that mm-hmm. aren't as well known, as, you know, the captain Treasure Jones who died, I think those are the interesting things for me. I had actually talked to the ship's captain, mm-hmm. The current one, Everett.
Yep.
And we were just talking about, you know, some of the deaths on the Queen Mary. He actually told me that back when the ship was running, there was this one man, and he would go like before, after the Turkish bath sauna had closed down, so there was no one in there. Mm-hmm. He would go in there and just sit there. And one day he had a heart attack when it was closed, and no one knew or found him, and the sauna was left on. So the next day when they discovered him, he had literally like boiled.
Oh my God.
He not only had a heart attack and died, but his body had like cooked because it was sitting there in a sauna.
Oh God.
And I think it's so interesting because you don't hear stories like that, but there's been so many deaths on that ship. I can't imagine how many more stories there are that are so obscure like that.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like there's so much more to uncover with that.
I wish he would have shared that with me. He was kind of a hard nut to crack when I had him on the air.
Oh, you had him on?
Yeah, I had him on. It was a couple years ago. But yeah, it was like he was very not going into, he talked kind of like some of the stuff, but we never went into like some of those things. That was interesting. That's interesting.
I caught him when he was polishing stuff on in like one of the deck floors. He was polishing some of the stuff in the cases.
Yeah.
So he's just kind of hanging out. So, I mean,
sure.
Maybe that was the difference. He's just kind of hanging out.
A little more comfort, yeah, versus let's sit down and talk and let's follow what we're going to say and not say. Now,
yeah, he was on his favorite place in the world, just polishing like antiques. So he was just chilling.
That's cool.
Polishing like silverware, I think.
I would say Queen Mary's a good solid number two for me. I was fascinated by that with watching Unsolved Mysteries as a kid. Have you ever seen the episode of the Queen Mary from like the 80s?
I'm not sure. I might Google. Have seen it like a rerun.
Yeah.
But it's hard to say.
I'm sure it's on like YouTube or something.
Like if they repackaged it, I might have seen like the Unsolved Mysteries. I don't remember what they would have repackaged it on like Travel Channel or something, but
I don't know.
It's hard to say.
No, but
I would have been young.
That was such an interesting one because I was just a little kid when it originally came out. But that was where I first learned about EVPs. This was like nobody talked about those things yet. But they brought like a tape recorder, like the old black, you know, rectangle box. And then they put that in the compartment. Was at the front of the ship where it had the damage? And they recorded, and on the tape, it sounded like the sounds of the ship getting hit. And then there was like some screaming type sounds on there. And it was very, very creepy. And then they did like the pool area and the footprints and all that. So that was another one. Ocean liners have been a big fascination for me, like since Titanic too. That was another one. But obviously that's at the bottom of the ocean. But that Queen Mary, there's I've never been on it, but it's on my to-do list before it like gets, you know, accidentally sunk or something and moved out to the ocean. But
they're not sinking it. They're not sinking it. They're repairing
good,
it.
Good. Good. Because I was concerned. I was watching that and like, this doesn't look very good for the Queen Mary. But
no, I live close to it. So we see that's like in my city. So we see all the city posts there. Currently, they're going to open up the front area of it, not the ship itself, but kind of like the parking lot area for events. They're currently they put in like better build system, I think.
Okay.
They're repairing like the whole paint job. They're doing a lot of stuff. And then they have, I think, like a 10-year plan or something to repair it. So they are currently working on it. They're not going to sink it.
Good.
I
was just afraid it's going to be one of those, well, we're going to move it over to Taiwan and make a hotel out of it.
They removed the boiler system on it.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So honestly, no, they don't have a boiler system in there. And honest to God, it's enclosed with rocks.
Yeah.
So they'd have to remove all the rocks. There's no boiler system. And in the shape it's in, because they remove like a lot of the heavy stuff.
Yeah.
Probably tip over like 30 feet from where
exactly.
That's it. It would not make it like across the sea.
Yeah.
And it would probably not make it out of the port.
Yeah. I just, I didn't want it to see it like kind of turn into like the SS United States in Philadelphia that just kind of sits there rotting. Or someone's like, well, everybody's trying to do this, but we already don't have money. That's good to hear. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, I've been hearing rumors too that they might want to make it like a federal monument or something. So then it gets not the city's money, but the federal. It's federally protected.
Sure, because isn't in the care of Long Beach right now? Like the city itself.
Yes, it is. They've been renting it out to like management companies to handle it and have plans. But the last company, I think they didn't spend any of the money there, and then they got like arrested or something for doing the stock market in like China or Korea.
Uh huh.
So the last company like completely went down, and it's had like tons of management companies throughout the years. So I don't know what they're doing on that end, but they've like given money to fix it up and just no one has.
Well, hopefully
like maybe painting it.
Yeah. Well, hopefully it stays alive. Cause that would be a shame if that's the last thing of that era, you know, a ship like that.
For sure.
Yeah. And all the ghosts, what are they going to do?
No, I don't know what they would do either. But yeah, I mean, like even the pool area underneath the first class swimming pool, they removed all the support beams when they removed the the boilers, so it like there's no support under it, and that's why like no one can go in there. Honestly, like my family talked about this before, the first class swimming pool, although like opulent and everything, is just extremely creepy on its own. Yeah. I don't know if it's just a ghost or just the way it looks, but I like we've talked about like who would want to swim there like when it was around, because it's just a really creepy place.
It does. Everything I've seen on it, the videos, it has a very strange vibe to it.
Yeah, like I can't imagine like if it was full of water wanting to go in there and swim. It just seems like ridiculously creepy. I don't know if it's lighting. I just can't figure out like. Obviously, I can see the ghost in there and he's very creepy, but like it's just still creepy in general. I don't know what it is about the design.
That wraps up part two of our conversation with Sophia Temporelli. A big thank you to her for sharing her experiences with us on the program today. And thank you to you for supporting the show and keeping us on the air. We would not exist without it. Until next time, for all of us at the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.